All right, get ready to dive deep because today it's all about organic chemistry.
Sounds fun.
We've got a ton of textbook excerpts on, let me see, alkanes and cycloalkanes.
Okay.
So we'll be breaking down all the essentials, like naming them, how to visualize their 3D shapes, and even some of their reactions.
Cool.
So by the time we're done with this deep dive, you'll be a pro at naming those basic alkanes, and you'll understand like why a diamond is so strong,
Oh, interesting.
but then muscles are so flexible.
That is a cool contract. And it really highlights, I guess you could say, like the importance of rotation around those carbon single
Oh,
bonds.
we see.
So that rotation, that's what allows for things to be flexible.
Okay.
And then when that rotation is restricted, that's what leads to that rigidity.
So in a diamond, those bonds are like stuck.
Yeah, they're locked in place.
And that's what makes them so strong. But in our muscles, those bonds can rotate,
Exactly.
which is why we can bend and stretch.
It's kind of like let's see. Like the difference between, say, a metal rod and a chain.
Okay.
That rod is rigid, but the chain has flexibility.
It says it can move.
Yeah, because of those links, they can move.
Got it. That makes total sense. Okay, but before we get into all that twisting and turning,
Yeah.
let's start with the basics. So, alkanes, they're hydrocarbons. So
Wow.
that means they're only made of carbon and hydrogen atoms,
Yep.
and they've got only single bonds between those carbons.
And then cycloalkanes are just alkanes that form a ring.
So, like, picture alkanes doing a conga line.
I like that.
All right, so to make things even easier, we can use formulas, right?
Yeah, for alkanes, it's CnH2n plus 2.
Okay, and for cycloalkanes.
It's CnH2n.
Perfect. Now, all these structures, these aren't just like theoretical things we draw on paper, right?
Oh, right.
They're actually all around us.
Yeah, like in petroleum.
Right, which of course, we use for energy.
Yeah, that's a major source of those hydrocarbons.
But then, of course, we have to think about the environmental impact.
Yeah, like climate change and all those greenhouse gases.
Right, exactly. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about how to name these alkanes.
Oh, okay.
And good news, it's actually pretty logical.
Yeah, the IUPAC system, it's really not as bad as it sounds.
It's like learning to count, but for organic chemistry.
Yeah, you just got to recognize those roots.
Like meth, eth, prop, all those Greek and Latin roots.
Yeah, once you've got those down, it's easy, especially for unbranched alkanes.
And even for branched alkanes, there's a method to the madness.
And then we have those common names too.
Like isopropyl and tert-butyl.
Yeah, chemists use those all the time. Sometimes they're just easier.
For sure.
Okay, but naming is just the first step, right? We
Yeah.
got to visualize these molecules in 3D.
Oh, yeah. Because on paper, they look flat.
Exactly, but in real life, they're not flat at all.
Right. We got to see them from different angles to really get them,
Yeah.
That's where Newman projections come in. Newman projections. Okay, they sound kind of intimidating.
No, they're actually pretty simple.
Okay, so how do they work?
Well, imagine like you're steering straight down a carbon-carbon bond.
Oh, okay.
That's basically what a Newman projection shows you.
So if we take ethane as an example, just those two carbons, a Newman projection would show us what it looks like if we're looking right down that bond between them.
Exactly.
And here's the thing, right? Those single bonds, they're not just static.
No, they're always rotating. Those molecules are constantly like spinning around.
So they're changing their conformation all the time.
Yep, it's a constant dance party.
Okay, I'm starting to see where that analogy comes in. But wouldn't all those rotations just create a jumbled mess of structures?
That's where conformational analysis comes in. So
Ah.
conformational analysis, that helps us understand like the energy, you
So
know?
the energy it takes for that molecule to rotate.
Yeah, and it turns out like some of those positions are better than others, like more stable
Yeah.
energetically.
So some dance moves are smoother than others.
Exactly.
And how can we see that?
Well, there's this thing called a potential energy diagram. It's like a map of the molecule's energy.
Got it.
And as the molecule rotates, you can see how the energy changes.
So those conformations at the bottom of the diagram, those are like the comfortable resting spots on the dance floor.
Exactly. So for ethane, like we've been talking about, the most stable one is the staggered conformation.
Staggered. What does that actually look like?
So in our Newman projection, the hydrogen atoms, they're all as far apart as
They
possible.
need their space.
Exactly. That minimizes repulsions between those electron clouds. We call that steric hindrance.
Okay.
And that leads to lower energy.
So it's like those hydrogens are trying to give each other some breathing room.
Exactly. Now, ethane, that's pretty simple, right? But then you have butane.
So butane, it's got an extra carbon.
Yep. And two of the hydrogens are replaced with a methyl group, CH3.
So more dancers on the floor, more possibilities for stepping on toes.
Exactly. So butane, it has these two main conformations, anti and gauche.
Okay. Anti and gauche. Are those like dance style?
So picture this, all right. In the anti conformation, those two methyl groups, they're as far apart as possible.
Oh.
And that minimizes those steric interactions.
Right. So they're like on opposite sides of the dance floor.
Exactly. Nice and low energy.
Yeah.
But then you have gauche.
So what happens in the gauche conformation?
Well, those methyl groups, they're closer together.
Yeah.
It's not as good, energetically speaking. Those methyl groups, they get a little too close for comfort.
So it's like bumping into someone on a really crowded dance floor.
Yeah, we call that interaction a gauche interaction.
Got it. So even though those single bonds can rotate, there are still those preferred positions, the ones that minimize those gauche interactions.
Exactly. It's all about finding those low energy states.
Okay, so before we move on to those cycloalkanes, those ring-shaped molecules, our sources mention something called stereoisomers. Can you explain that a little?
Sure. So stereoisomers, those are molecules that have the same atoms.
Right.
And they're connected in the same way.
Okay.
But they have different 3D arrangements.
Like two dance partners doing the same steps but facing different directions.
Exactly. Same partner, same dance, just different orientation.
Okay, we'll come back to that later when we talk about rings.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we've talked about linear molecules, but what about when we make a ring? Do those bonds still have that same freedom to rotate?
That's where it gets really interesting. When we make rings, we introduce something called ring strain.
Ring strain? Sounds uncomfortable.
Well, it can be. It's basically about how those bonds are forced to bend and twist to make that ring.
Oh, okay.
So there are two main types of ring strain, angle strain and torsional strain.
Okay, break those down for me.
So angle strain, that happens when the bond angles in the ring are not ideal.
Not ideal for who?
Well, for carbon, those bond angles should be about 109.5 degrees. But in a ring, sometimes they have to be different. It's like trying to force a square peg into a round hole.
So it creates tension. What about torsional strain?
Well, torsional strain comes from those eclipsing interactions we talked about before. Remember, where atoms are forced to be closer together than they want to be.
Like those crowded dance floor situations.
Exactly. Like two big dancers trying to share the same space.
So rings create all sorts of strain for these molecules.
They can. Our sources go through examples like cyclopropane, cyclobutane, and cyclopentane. They all have different levels of ring strain.
Okay.
But there's one that's really stable.
Which one?
Cyclohexane.
Cyclohexane, what makes it so special?
Well, it can adopt this like really stable conformation called the chair conformation.
Chair conformation? Are we talking furniture now?
It's just a way to visualize its 3D shape.
Mm-hmm.
So in the chair conformation, cyclohexane doesn't have angle strain or torsional strain. It's very happy. So it's like the ideal seating arrangement. Exactly. That's why it's so common in nature. Now, the sources also talk about axial and equatorial positions.
Oh, yeah. What are those?
So picture the chair conformation like a real chair, right?
Okay.
The axial positions, those point straight up and down like the chair legs.
Got it.
And the equatorial positions, those stick out a little like armrests.
I see. And then during a ring flip, all those positions switch, right?
Yeah, like musical chairs.
So what was axial becomes equatorial and vice versa.
Exactly. So even in its most stable form, cyclohexane is still dynamic.
Okay, cool. Now, what if we add a methyl group to this cyclohexane party? Does that mess things up?
Adding a methyl group, that can make a big difference. Remember those 1003 diaxial interactions we talked about with butane?
Where things get too crowded and cause strain?
Right. So if that methyl group ends up in an axial position, it gets too close to the hydrogens.
Too close for comfort.
Yep. That leads to repulsion, higher energy, not good.
So it's like trying to squeeze into a crowded seat.
Exactly.
Mm.
That equatorial position is much better for that methyl group.
So it's like choosing the best seat on the cyclohexane chair.
Exactly.
Okay. So just like with butane, cyclohexane is trying to minimize those interactions.
Yep. Always looking for those low energy states.
Now there's even more. Our sources talk about disubstituted cyclohexane.
Oh, yeah. That's where you have two groups on the ring.
And that's where those stereoisomers come back, right?
Exactly. So those groups, they can be on the same side of the ring, which is cis.
Okay.
Or on opposite sides, which is trans.
So like having two dancers on either side of a revolving door?
I like that. And there's a trick to figure out if it's cis or trans. You just got to look at whether the groups are attached by the upper bond or the lower bond.
So if they're both on upper bonds, that's cis.
Yeah, or both on lower bonds.
And if one is on an upper bond and the other's on a lower bond, that's trans.
Exactly. And of course, those conformational preferences still apply.
So de-equatorial is usually more stable.
Yep, where both groups are in those equatorial positions. Nice and comfy.
Got it. So even with two groups, cyclohexane is still trying to be in that low energy state. But wait, there's even more? Our sources mention things like bicyclic and polycyclic alkanes.
Oh, yeah. Those are molecules with two or more rings fused together.
So like dicalin has two cyclohexane rings joined together.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Okay, so even with multiple rings, these molecules still follow the same conformational rules. It's amazing how much variety we get with just carbon-carbon single bonds.
It is.
But what about their reactivity? Do alkenes do anything besides just like dance around?
Well, alkenes are known for being pretty unreactive.
So they're like the wallflowers of the molecular world.
Kind of. They have these strong nonpolar bonds, so they don't react easily with lots of things.
Okay, but they must do something, right?
Oh, yeah. They definitely can react under certain conditions.
Okay, tell me.
One important one is combustion, their reaction with oxygen.
Right. That's what powers our cars and stuff.
Yep. They can also react with halogens like chlorine and bromine. And with fluorine, things can get a little crazy.
Okay, so while they might seem laid back, they still have a wild side. But what about hydrogenation?
Oh, right. Our sources mentioned that too.
It's a way to synthesize alkanes, right?
Yeah, basically it transforms double or triple bonds into single bonds. You add hydrogen across those multiple bonds.
So it's like taking those fancy double and triple bonds and simplifying them.
Exactly. It's a common way to make alkanes from alkenes and alkynes. You usually need hydrogen gas and metal catalyst.
So we can actually build them from scratch.
Okay, but this wouldn't be a real deep dive without a little detective work.
Ah, you're talking about the Index of Hydrogen Deficiency.
The IHD.
Yeah, it's a cool tool. It lets us figure out how many rings or double bonds are in a molecule just by looking at its formula.
So, like, it's a molecular fingerprint.
Yeah. You compare the molecule's formula to what it would be if it was totally saturated, like a perfect alkane with no rings or double bonds. And that difference tells you the IHD. So even without knowing the exact structure, we can get a good idea of what might be going on.
Exactly. And it works even with other atoms, like halogens, oxygen, or nitrogen.
We just have to adjust the calculation, right?
Exactly. For halogens, we treat them like hydrogens.
Okay.
For oxygen, we kind of just ignore it.
It sounds harsh.
It's just to simplify things.
Got it.
And then for nitrogen, we subtract a hydrogen for each nitrogen.
Okay, so each element has its own little quirk. But the main idea is still the same. We're trying to understand how those carbon atoms are connected.
Yep. It's like having a blueprint.
A blueprint that tells us what kind of building it is, even if we can't see all the details.
I like that. And all of this, all these insights, they come from one of the most fundamental ideas in chemistry.
What's that?
Nature wants to be in a low energy state.
Ah, yes. Energy minimization. Our old friend.
Exactly. It's what drives those conformational preferences.
Those rotations, those equatorial substituents.
Yep. Those molecules are always trying to find that sweet spot where they're most stable.
It's like they're always looking for the most comfortable position on the dance floor.
And that drive for stability, it even influences those steric factors we talked about.
Those interactions in space that can affect how a molecule behaves.
Exactly. It all comes down to minimizing energy.
So even these simple alkanes and cycloalkanes are governed by these forces, this drive for stability, for minimizing energy.
Absolutely. And understanding those forces, that's the key to unlocking all the secrets of organic chemistry. It's what gives us this incredible diversity of molecular structures, all from just a few basic building blocks.
It really is a beautiful dance between structure and energy. All right, so we've covered a lot. We've talked about how to name these hydrocarbons, how to see them in 3D, and we even dipped our toes into some of their reactions. But our sources go even further. They talk about some really cool applications of these molecules.
Oh, yeah. Like, did you know that insects use hydrocarbons to communicate?
Wait, really?
Yeah, they use these chemicals called pheromones, and some of them are actually hydrocarbons.
So these little creatures are sending messages through molecules. That's amazing.
It is. And those pheromones, their structures can be surprisingly simple. Like, for example, cockroaches.
Cockroaches, what do they use?
One species uses undecane as an aggregation pheromone.
Okay, what does that even mean?
It's like a chemical signal that tells all the other cockroaches to come hang out.
So undecane, it's like a cockroach party invitation.
Exactly.
And what about other insects?
Oh, there are lots of examples, like the tiger moth. The females, they release this chemical, 2-methylheptadecane.
To do what?
To attract mates.
So it's like a love potion.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's not just insects, right?
Oh, no.
Our sources say that pheromones might even play a role in human behavior.
Yeah, there's some evidence that certain odors, like musk compounds, they can cause different responses in men and women. Maybe that's why perfumes are so popular.
So they're tapping into our primal instincts through molecules.
It's possible.
Okay, that's wild. But what about other applications?
Oh, yeah, there are tons.
Like what?
Well, hydrocarbons are really important in material science. Like, you know those carbon allotropes?
Allotropes, like diamond and graphite.
Exactly. They're all made of carbon, but the atoms are arranged differently.
So diamond has that, like, rigid 3D network.
Yeah, and that's why it's so hard. But graphite, it's different. It has these flat sheets.
Yeah, and those sheets can slide past each other.
Yep. Which is why graphite is so slippery and why it's used in pencils.
Okay, so diamond and graphite, those are pretty cool. But what else?
Well, those same sheets of carbon atoms, you can actually roll them up into tubes.
And that's what makes carbon nanotubes.
Exactly.
Wow, I've heard those are like super strong.
Yeah, they're strong, lightweight, and they can conduct electricity really well.
Okay, so from the hardest natural material to a super strong conductor, it's all about how those carbon atoms are arranged.
That's it. And then you have buckyballs.
Buckyballs. What are those?
Also known as Buckminster Fullerene. It's like a, it's a spherical molecule. It's got 60 carbon atoms.
60. Wow.
Yeah. They're arranged in hexagons and pentagons, kind of like a soccer ball.
Buckyballs. The soccer stars of the molecular world.
Huh? Exactly. And they have some pretty unique properties, too. People are trying to use them for all sorts of things, like drug delivery and solar energy.
So from cockroach invitations to super materials, it all starts with these simple hydrocarbons.
It really is amazing. And the possibilities are endless.
It's like we're just starting to understand what we can do with these molecules.
Exactly. The only limit is our imagination.
That's pretty exciting. Okay, so we've talked about their structure, how they move, but we haven't really gotten into their reactivity that much. I mean, I know they're not the most reactive bunch, but it can't be totally inert, right?
Oh, definitely not. We've talked about combustion, but there's a whole world of alkane reactions out there.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Where do we start?
Well, one important type of reaction is where you replace those hydrogens on an alkane with something else. We call those substitution reactions.
Okay.
And those reactions often involve these things called free radicals.
Free radicals? Those sound kind of dangerous.
Well, they can be. They're atoms or molecules that have an unpaired electron.
An unpaired electron.
Yeah. So they're super reactive, always looking for an electron to pair up with.
So they're like those people at a party who are always trying to mingle.
Exactly. And in the process, they can trigger a chain reaction.
A chain reaction.
Yeah. Where they cause a bunch of other reactions to happen.
Oh, okay.
And that can lead to the substitution of those alkane hydrogens.
I'm starting to see how this works, but how do those free radicals even form in the first place?
One way is through something called homolytic cleavage.
Homolytic cleavage.
It's where a bond breaks and each atom keeps one of the electrons.
So it's like a clean break. Everyone gets to keep half of their stuff.
Exactly. And then those atoms with their unpaired electrons, they become those reactive free radicals.
So then those free radicals go on a quest to find another electron, and that causes all these other reactions to happen.
That's it. A common example is halogenation, where you take a halogen like chlorine or bromine and you replace a hydrogen on the alkane.
Halogenation. We talked about that before, right?
Yeah. But now we're getting into the mechanism.
The mechanism.
It's basically the step-by-step process of how that reaction actually happens.
Oh, I see. So it's like we're going behind the scenes of the molecular dance party, seeing how all those individual steps lead to the final product.
Exactly. And understanding those steps, it's really important. It helps us predict what's going to happen and how to control the reaction.
So it's like having a molecular playbook that tells us how to get from A to B.
That's a good way to think about it. So for halogenation, the mechanism has three main steps: initiation, propagation, and termination.
Initiation, propagation, termination. Sounds like a dance routine.
Well, in a way, it is. Initiation is where those free radicals first form.
Okay.
Usually need some energy, like heat or light, to break that halogen bond.
So that's like the spark that gets the party started.
Yep. Once those halogen free radicals are out there, then the propagation steps take over.
And what happens during propagation?
So those halogen free radicals, they're super reactive, right?
Right.
So they attack the alkane and steal a hydrogen atom.
Oh.
And that creates a new carbon-centered free radical.
So it's like they're playing a game of molecular tag. The free radical passes its unpaired electron to the alkane, and that creates a new free radical.
That's a great analogy.
And then that new free radical can react with another halogen molecule, and the cycle continues.
Exactly. It keeps going until the termination step.
So what happens during termination?
Well, eventually those free radicals, they find each other.
They get tired of playing tag.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah?
They combine and form a stable bond.
So that ends the chain reaction.
Yep. And what you're left with is a mix of halogenated alkanes.
So it's not just a simple one-to-one substitution. You can get a lot of different products depending on how those free radicals interact with the alkane.
Exactly. And that's why understanding those mechanisms is so important. It helps us figure out how to control those reactions.
So we can be like molecular chefs, using our knowledge of these reactions to create the products we want. But besides halogenation, are there other reactions that are important for alkanes?
Oh, for sure. There's combustion, which we talked about a little bit before.
That's the one where the alkane reacts with oxygen, right?
Yeah, and it releases a lot of energy as heat and light.
So it's a very exothermic reaction.
Exactly. It's what makes alkanes such good fuels. But it's not always the most useful for controlled synthesis. Mm. You know, it's a bit too explosive.
So how do chemists tame that reaction? How do they get alkanes to react in a more controlled way?
Well, that's where our understanding of those reaction mechanisms comes in. We use catalysts to guide those reactions along specific pathways.
Catalysts, those are like the party planners of the molecular world.
Uh-huh, yeah. They help those molecules interact in the right way. And by using different catalysts and different reaction conditions, we can get alkenes to participate in all sorts of reactions.
So it's like being a molecular choreographer, guiding those alkanes through a series of steps to create a beautiful dance.
I love that analogy. Mm. And that's what makes organic chemistry so fascinating. We can take these simple molecules and use them to create all sorts of amazing things.
It's like we're just beginning to understand the true potential of alkanes and cycloalkanes.
Exactly. There's so much more to discover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really mind-blowing what we can do with these hydrocarbons. Like, we're almost learning their language, you know?
Like, the language.
Yeah, and starting to create our own, like, molecular symphonies.
I love that. It's like we're not just watching the dance anymore. We're starting to choreograph it ourselves.
Exactly.
Okay, but before we get too carried away with our conducting, let's get back to those molecular machines you mentioned earlier. Our sources talk about molecules acting as tiny machines. It's like, is that even possible?
It really is amazing, isn't it? This idea that we can design and build molecules that actually do things.
Do things. Like what kind of things?
Well, it's all about controlling how they move, how they interact.
Okay.
Remember those interlocking rings we talked about, the catenanes?
Yeah.
Well, researchers have made these catenane-based molecules where one ring can, like, rotate around the other.
Really?
Yeah, but in a controlled way. So it's like a tiny gear.
A molecular gear.
Yeah, and it can switch between two states, like on and off.
So it's like a tiny switch built right into the molecule.
Exactly.
That's incredible. What about those rotaxins, the ones with the thread and the ring? What can they do?
Oh, rotaxins, those are even cooler. They give us even more control over that motion.
Okay, so how do they work?
Well, researchers have made these rotaxane systems that act like tiny shuttles.
Shuttles?
Yeah, they can move a molecule along a track.
So they're like tiny molecular vehicles?
Exactly. They've even made rotaxane-based motors.
Shoulders.
Yeah, they can convert light energy into mechanical energy.
Wait, so we're talking about molecules that can move like cars, carry things, and even convert energy.
It sounds crazy, right?
It's like those tiny nanobots you see in movies.
It does sound like science fiction. But it's all based on those same principles we've been talking about, you know, molecular structure, bonding.
Right.
It's amazing what we can do when we understand how to design those molecular architectures.
So it's like we're not just observing those molecules anymore.
Nope.
We're actually controlling them.
We're building things with them.
That's incredible. Okay, so it seems like we're just starting to understand what's possible with these molecules.
Oh, definitely. The field of molecular machines, it's still very young.
Yeah.
But the possibilities are huge. We could use them for drug delivery, for building new materials, all sorts of things.
It makes you wonder what other amazing discoveries are out there just waiting to be made.
For sure. And it all goes back to that fundamental idea, you know, nature's preference for those lower energy states.
Ah, yes. Energy minimization. Always striving for stability.
Exactly. And those energy diagrams we looked at, they show us that, you know, how molecules try to adopt those conformations that minimize energy.
So it's like those molecules are always looking for that comfy spot on the dance floor, the one where they can just relax.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's not just the molecule itself, right?
Oh, right.
The environment around it matters too.
So like the other molecules it's interacting with.
Exactly. Those intermolecular forces can affect a molecule's behavior, how it reacts.
So it's like a molecular dance party where the music can change the moves.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so what's the next move in our molecular dance party? What other wonders await us in this world of alkanes and cycloalkanes?
Well, we've talked about how these hydrocarbons are structured, how they move, but now let's dive into their reactivity. We've touched on combustion, but there's a whole world of reactions out there.
Okay, I'm ready to get reactive. Tell me everything.
So when we talk about alkane reactivity, you know, we got to remember that they're generally pretty chill. Those bonds, they're strong and nonpolar. They don't really want to react with most things.
So they're like those people at a party who just want to hang out by the snacks and chat, not really interested in dancing.
Uh-huh. That's a good one. But, you know, even the most introverted partygoer, you can sometimes convince them to dance. It's the same with alkanes. Under the right conditions, they can definitely react. And combustion, that's a big one.
Right, combustion. Keeps our cars running and all that. It's like the alkane finally lets loose and sets the dance floor on fire.
Exactly. They react with oxygen, release a ton of energy, all that heat and light. Powerful reaction, but not always the best for, you know, controlled chemistry.
So how do we control those alkanes? How do chemists get them to react in a more, I don't know, civilized way?
Well, that's where our knowledge of those reaction mechanisms comes in. And catalysts. We can use catalysts to kind of guide those reactions along a specific path, get the products we want.
So catalysts are like the chaperones at the molecular dance, making sure things don't get too out of hand.
Uh-huh. I like that. They help those molecules find the right partners, you know, without getting too involved themselves. But yeah, we've got halogenation, but there are other important reactions too.
Like what? Give me the highlights.
Okay, well, there's cracking. That's a big one, especially for the petroleum industry.
Cracking? Sounds intense.
It is. You're basically breaking those carbon-carbon bonds, taking those big alkane molecules and breaking them down into smaller ones.
So it's like taking a big, complicated dance routine and breaking it down into smaller, simpler steps.
Exactly. And we usually do this at high temperatures, high pressures. It lets us take those heavy parts of crude oil and turn them into things we can actually use, like gasoline.
Oh, okay. So that's how we get gasoline. It's amazing what we can do when we understand how these molecules react.
It is. It's like discovering a whole new set of moves for our molecular dance party.
And we're still learning. It feels like we're just scratching the surface of what's possible with alkanes and cycloalkanes.
Oh, absolutely. Our understanding of organic chemistry keeps growing. And with it, our ability to use these molecules to create new things, new materials, new technologies. Who knows what the future holds?
It really makes you think, you know. Even in the simplest things, there's so much complexity and potential. Those carbon single bonds, who knew they could lead to so many possibilities.
It's the beauty of chemistry, right? Understanding the world at its most fundamental level and then using that knowledge to create something new, something amazing.
Well said. I'm feeling pretty inspired after all this. I don't know about you. This deep dive into alkanes and cycloalkanes has been a real eye-opener.
Me too. I always love exploring this stuff, and it's even better when you can share that passion with others.
Well, thank you so much for being our guide on this journey. I feel like I've learned a ton, and I'm sure our listeners have too.
It was my pleasure. Always happy to talk molecules and uncover those hidden connections that make chemistry so fascinating.
And to our listeners, keep exploring, keep asking questions, never stop diving deep into the world of science. Who knows what amazing discoveries are out there just waiting to be found.
Until next time. Keep those brains buzzing and those molecules dancing.